helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. While many people say what you don't know can't hurt you, I contend that what you know that just ain't so is what really bites you in the butt. I know, there are English majors across the country yelling at me right now for using the word ain't, but let's put that aside the bad grammar for just a moment and consider if the sentiment is true. So I'm frequently challenged by people who know something to be true, but can provide no proof, no evidence, nothing to back up their statement. Now, sometimes it's a minor disagreement. Others are a fundamental misunderstanding that leads to devastating circumstances. How can we know if what we know is true or not? How can we test what others tell us to see if it's true? And what are the consequences of not only living a life based on incorrect information, but of running a country that way? Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I am glad you could join me today. I have a bit of an announcement to start off. I want to thank those of you who subscribe to my YouTube channel. You can find me on YouTube. Just look for Constitution Study. I think you'll find it was youtube.com/Constitution Study. I've hit 1,000 subscribers, which is a bit of a milestone. I'm kind of happy about that, and I want to thank all of you that have subscribed. And for those of you who don't subscribe, well, maybe you want to consider it. Now, it's not the content here from the radio program. This is content from my website. So it's the videos I put out every week. There's frequently things like little shorts and little snippets that you might find interesting, and sometimes I even just do announcements of what's going on. So if you're a subscriber on YouTube, thank you. If you're not, would you please consider it? And while we're at it, do you subscribe to the podcast for the radio program? If not, would you consider that as well? See, when you subscribe, it helps bump the Constitution Study up in ratings. When people are searching for constitutional answers, sometimes they'll find it if we get a better rating. So those subscriptions really matter. But let's get to this question of if what you know that just ain't so really bites you in the backside. As I said, in this position, people are frequently challenging what I have to say. And I have no problem with that as long as they don't get mean. I don't like people, you know, some people like to swear. I don't deal with them. Some people just get mean and vindictive. I don't deal with them for very long. Some, you know, we can have an ongoing conversation and we may not even come to a common understanding, but we can at least have a decent debate about it. But the one thing I'm always going to looking for when someone challenges me or someone makes an assertion is, where's the proof? I mean, just the other day, I had someone say, well, the Constitution says the Supreme Court gets to define the terms. And I'm like, I challenge you, show me where in the Constitution the court has that authority. Because I know you can't find it. Why? Because I've looked. But that's the point, is very often these debates start off with me asking them, where's your proof? Or if you make a statement and it's not ridiculously outlandishly wrong, I usually start out with, where's the proof? For example, I was on a conference call the other day, and somebody said that in 1871, Congress threw out the old Constitution, created a new one. I said, no, that's a lie. Prove it. Show me where Congress actually did that. Well, the Incorporation Act, I've read that document, and that document doesn't say any such thing. See, that's the first thing I want us to recognize. And I want to spend more time probably near the end of the program about how do you deal with these challenges. But let's start off, let's take a look at some of the consequences of simply accepting things without proof, things that you know that just aren't so. Now, one of the more recent and examples has to revolve around COVID-19. There are so many things that people know that just isn't so. For example, at the beginning of the scamdemic, there were all sorts of experts that knew the virus was born in a lab. The director of national intelligence, the secretary of state, they knew that this came from a lab. Top public health officials like Dr. Redfield testified that it came most likely came from a lab. And then along comes Dr. Fauci, and he starts painting it as a conspiracy theory. And now all of a sudden, we have all these people making all these decisions because they know that COVID-19 came from a wet market and a pangolin and who knows what. Now, in that situation, what are the consequences of directing all of the all of the attempts to come up with a cure or a vaccine based on natural origins rather than the lab origins, which, by the way, now we know is almost assuredly where this came from? Well, I'm not a virologist, and I don't play one on TV. But I have to think, if you're looking for a natural origin, a solution to a disease that's a natural origin, you're going to focus on certain things. How does it transmit? Where does it come from? What is the origin species? But if it was not naturally originated, if it was man-made, then do those efforts to find the patient zero, are they a waste of time? And again, if you are developing a treatment based on natural origins or a vaccine, or even if you're looking for methodologies to stop the spread, and all your assumptions are based on the fact that it is a natural origin, when it's not, how much of that has been wasted? Now, I've talked till I'm blue in the face, but how all of this has been used to, quote unquote, mark information inconvenient to the government as disinformation so they can shut it down. So it's not simply that people don't want you to know what's so, they want you to believe a lie, they want to hide from you even the possibility that there is another answer. I was listening to an interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And they were talking about the vaccines and the effectiveness. And he kept saying, but it's the consensus. It's the consensus. It's the consensus. And I did one of my, yelling at the radio moments, even though it was a podcast. I kept yelling. I wanted to go, but what if the consensus is wrong? See, consensus doesn't mean that it's right. Consensus merely means a lot of people believe it. But that doesn't make it true. And if that is the case, what is being done? What damage could be done simply because we're following consensus without deciding whether or not what the consensus believes is true or not? It's the tyranny of the expert. The experts all agree, yeah, but what if they're wrong? We don't consider that. Or what about the hype about the vaccines? We were told, you take this mRNA shot, And you won't get sick and you won't spread it and we'll stop the disease in its tracks. And to this day, there are people promoting the idea that the mRNA shots, that these fake vaccines will somehow stop the spread, stop you from getting sick, even after experts keep saying, well, it's not going to stop the spread. It's merely going to keep you from getting as sick as you could have gotten. But we were all convinced. Everyone from the president on down to the media have been promoting, you got to take the shot because it'll stop the spread. You won't get sick. You won't transmit the disease. And here we are 3 years later, and we have a statement by Dr. Peter Marks, a top official at the FDA, a document that was made where he says, it is important to note that FDA's authorization and licensure standards for vaccines do not require demonstration of the prevention of infection or transmission. Now, how many of you out there believed people when they said the vaccine, the quote-unquote vaccines, will keep you from getting sick? They'll prevent you from getting infected. They'll prevent you from transmitting the disease. Now we not only has that been patently obvious based on, well, take a look around, how many people, how many famous people, how many notable people got vaxxed and boosted and still got COVID-19. But here we have an admission in documentation from a top official at the FDA that the FDA doesn't even bother checking to see. It says they don't have to demonstrate that it prevents infection or that it prevents, that isn't a requirement for them to authorize these drugs. So let me ask you, do you feel swindled? I mean, the common understanding of a vaccine is that it's a treatment to prevent illness. But now we're finding out that's not what the FDA is testing for. They don't require to show that it actually does so. And in fact, the CDC for years has said that a vaccine is a product that produces immunity. Well, you know, vaccination is an injection of infectious organism in order to prevent disease. That's the definition the CDC has used for years, for decades. It wasn't until COVID-19 that they changed their definition to note that these now what they call vaccines don't prevent infection. But if they don't prevent infection, if they don't prevent transmission, how are they a public health matter? It's a private health matter. If you wish to take the jab because you believe it will limit the severity should you get COVID-19, be my guest. I don't care. But if you're trying to tell me I need to take the shot because it's going to prevent transmission, well, that's what you know that just ain't so. And how many millions of people have been coerced against their will to take a jab because people knew that it would prevent the spread. But that's something they knew that just wasn't so. It's what they know that just wasn't so. And how much damage has been done. We were told that this fake vaccine was effective. It was safe and effective. But now we're finding more and more instances of injury. Now, the rate of injury, the scale of injury, that may be an interesting discussion. It may be important discussion. Is a cure worse than the disease? But the very basic understanding that the vaccines were safe. How many people know the vaccines were safe, and we're finding out that's not as safe as we thought they were. Now, what percentage of people it is safe for, I don't know, because they're not really getting good numbers, at least not that I've seen. But we're seeing more and more examples of injuries from these shots, and those numbers are growing. Now, if you took the shot or you know someone who took the shot because they knew, I know, this is safe. I've been told by Fauci and the FDA, this is safe. I know it to be true. Therefore, I went ahead and did it. What are the consequences if you happen to be one of those people for whom it is not safe? Whether it be a genetic or some other disposition that leads you to have a problem, a reaction to these shots. Now, whether it's something relatively mild, there's been reports now of thousands of people saying they've developed tinnitus, a ringing in the ears after taking the COVID jab. That's annoying, but that is not devastating. Well, unless I guess you have to make a living by your ears. But what about the people that have died? There are reports of 1.1 million excess deaths in 2022. 1.1 million people more than expected died in 2022. What changed? Well, the fake vaccine, the jabs. Now, is that proof? No, it's causation. It's correlation. That does not necessarily mean causation, but it certainly is worth looking at. We have the reports from doctors, from medical examiners, seeing blood clots in the body. We're seeing all sorts of these problems. We're seeing young people dying of heart attacks after taking the jab. We're seeing all of these these side effects. And I have to wonder, Could any of this be because we knew that these jabs were safe when they really weren't? But again, it's not just the jabs that cause a problem. The jab themselves, it's not just the contents of the jab. There's actually more. And I want to get into that, but I want to take a break first because I want to make sure I have time to really get into this. Before I go, though, again, I'd love it if you went to the website, constitutionstudy.com. That's where you can find out everything that I'm doing here. Hey, if you want to subscribe to the YouTube channel, that'd be great. You can get my articles. You can get my videos at the website. You can ask a question. I'm looking for more questions that I can answer right here on the radio. Just go to the menu bar and click ask a question, fill out the form, hit the little checkbox that says answer this on the radio, and I'd be more than happy to do that. You can find all that and my mailing list and other and donation forms right there at constitutionstudy.com. Now, since we're talking about COVID, what is the best way that we've found, that scientists have found to deal with COVID? And that's to have a strong immune system. It's one of the reasons why they say vitamin D and vitamin C are so important. So if you want to help supporting your immune system on the go, I recommend Immune Super Boost from Healthy Cell. It combines over a dozen immune supplements in a single, easy-to-use, travel-ready gel pack. I use them especially when I'm on the road. I throw them in my bags, and it's the type of thing where if I'm going to be exposed to a lot of different people, I will take one. If I feel like I'm starting to get something, I'll take one. And, thank God I did not get, at least I don't think I got COVID. If I did, it wasn't bad enough for me to notice it. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off of your first order, whether it's Immune Super Boost or anything from Healthy Cell. They've got some wonderful products. All you have to do is use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So please, go to HealthyCell.com. Look over all the great products they have. Put your cart together. Make sure you add a little Immune Super Boost. At least that's what I would recommend. And then when you check out, put in that code OUTLOUD. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you'll get 25% off your very first order.
Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19? We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the immune super boost that I need. Go to HealthyCell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD, and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body. And now they found the solution. The miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're talking about what you know that just ain't so, and the consequences of that living that way. Now, in the beginning, I talked a lot about the origins of the COVID-19, as well as the effectiveness and safety of the fake vaccines. I still say fake because they don't legally meet the requirements of a vaccine. The CDC even had to change their own use or definition of the word vaccine in order to cover these shots. But one of the things that we found out is that the FDA does not require that these treatments prove that they are effective in order to get recommended approval, licensed by the FDA. And one of the, to me, most tragic examples of what you know that just isn't so biting you in the backside are the number of people being denied life-saving treatment because they refuse to take the fake vaccine, that they refuse to take the jab. One of the latest examples is a mother in Georgia who's been denied a kidney transplant by Emory Healthcare Inc. Why? Well, she's refused to take the jab. Now, here's a couple things to understand. Emory Healthcare doesn't explain why they require the shot. In fact, interesting to note, there's actually contradictory information. On April 24th, a spokesman told the Epoch Times that we continue to monitor the prevalence of COVID-19 and other respiratory illnesses in our community. Based on these assessments, the Emory Transplant Center currently recommends but does not require COVID-19 vaccinations for kidney transplant candidates and kidney transplant recipients. Because of the patient privacy rules, we cannot comment on a specific patient case. But according to the lawyers for this lady, she's being represented by Liberty Counsel, we have been told that the transplant coordinator told her, Ms. Doe, that she won't get on the kidney waiting list without the shot. If the patient cannot move forward with the process because they don't take the COVID vaccine, it's a requirement rather than a recommendation. Now, why all of this? Well, because we were told that this shot was a treatment for a public health emergency. We were told, and people believed, that the shot would stop the spread, that it would prevent transmission, it would prevent infection. But it doesn't. And there's scientific evidence to that fact. Yet 35% of transplant centers still require you take this shot as a condition to either donate or to receive an organ. Now, here's what's interesting. See, not only is this mother of seven, she's facing death, right? She's on dialysis. She's reached the end of the road. There's not much else they can do for her. She has already had COVID, meaning she has a natural immunity to the virus. But Emory Healthcare doesn't seem to care. They just see the bureaucracy of it. Oh, okay, well, you know, bureaucrats and whatnot. But I believe at this point, hundreds, if not thousands of others are being denied life-saving treatment because medical professionals know that these jabs will stop the spread and help keep other people in the hospital from being infected, even though that is not true, even though they have no evidence to back that up. But they know it. And because what they know just isn't so, we end up with hundreds or thousands of people that are going to die for a lack of treatment, not because there's not medical treatment available, but because the medical systems, and most of these happen to be large medical corporations because they have the funding to get the equipment to do these transplants, because they know something that just isn't so. And how many people are going to die from that? Well, let's change gears. Let's take a look at something else that millions of people know without a doubt that just isn't so. I have a question. I have a question for all of you to answer. Keep your answer to yourself because, well, I can't hear you. But answer this question. In 2020, did you vote for president? Now, everybody who said yes, you're wrong. Nobody votes for president. Nobody none of the people vote for president. The only people that actually vote for president are the presidential electors. I can prove it. Find a copy. Go to like Ballotopia or one of those places and find a copy of the 2020 ballot for your election. And what you'll see is that you are voting not for president, but for electors for president. So, you know, as we approach another presidential election season, it's well underway at this point, there's move to believe that there is a national popular vote. I keep hearing people saying, Republican hasn't won the national popular vote in so many elections. There is no national popular vote. I'm going to say that again. There is no national popular vote. Do you know why? Because there is not a single national election. Well, I take that back. There is one. When the presidential electors vote in their states for president, that is a national election. That is the only one. The people do not vote for president. The states do. But Paul, we've always voted for president. No, we've never voted for president. So everybody knows that we vote for president, but you look at Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2. Each state shall appoint, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct, a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. The states choose the president. The states appoint electors that will vote for president. The fact that the states use a popular vote in the state to determine who those electors are doesn't mean you're voting for president. There's no requirement. A state doesn't have to hold an election for president. Not constitutionally, not legally. They don't have to. But this is one of those things that we know that just isn't so. Which leads me to another article I saw, because once again, what we have popping up is the National Popular Vote Organization. See, they want to effectively bypass the Constitution and change how we elect the president. I can get into a long discussion about why the people do not vote for president. But the point is, they don't. The states do. But the National Popular Vote Organization, they want to change that. They want the president to be, catch this, democratically elected. But Paul, democracy is a good thing. No, democracy is an evil thing. Read our founding fathers. I think it's attributed to Jefferson that democracy is nothing more than mob rule, where 51% of the people can take away the rights of the other 49. Read others like, and there's John Adams, where the democracies are always destroy and they always destroy themselves. We are not a democracy. Now, the National Popular Vote says, well, rather than actually following the Constitution, we're going to kind of find a wiggle way around it. They want to create what's called an interstate compact so that whoever wins the National Popular Vote, the quote-unquote National Popular Vote that doesn't really exist, they want states to appoint their electors based on this fake National Popular Vote. Now, there are a lot of reasons why this is bad. First of all, again, it's unconstitutional. The states cannot enter into an interstate compact without the approval of Congress. That's Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3. So any quote-unquote interstate compact would not be legal because it doesn't follow the Constitution. But also, by changing the way we elect the president, we do more than simply say, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to vote, you know, National Popular Vote. You change the entire dynamic. See, right now, states get electors based on their representation in Congress. That means populous states like New York and California and Florida, they get more votes. Less populous states like, you know, the Dakotas, Idaho, they get fewer votes. But they still get votes, and they get enough votes to have some impact. Granted, North Dakota, I think, has North and South, I think they have 3 votes each, right? Because you got two senators and a representative. That's not a huge impact. But at least they care, especially the more middle of the road, right? The Tennessees, Carolinas, Kentucky, these states are kind of that middle of the road, what we sometimes refer to as, you know, the swing states, right? The states that can move Democrat, Republican, and actually make a difference. They matter. You go to a national popular vote, the states don't matter anymore. Meaning not only would the presidential candidates focus only on the concerns of the Californias, the Floridas, the New Yorks, it'd be even worse. See, they'd really only care about Los Angeles and San Francisco, Miami, New York City. They wouldn't care about the rest of the state that doesn't have the population. Again, I was born and raised in New York State. And in New York State, you know, the majority of the landmass of the state had one way of thinking. But the population in New York City always swayed things the other way. Now imagine those rural areas, they don't matter anymore. Because a candidate doesn't need to win New York State, they need to win New York City. They need to win Boston, Miami, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. They don't need the rest of the state. It's a fundamental change in how we choose a president, and it's a fundamental change to the nation as a whole. Yet that's what some people want to go to, because they know that they vote for president. They know that the president is elected by the people. They know that the role of the president is to serve the people. But that's not so. See, the reason, look at Article 2. Look at the role, the jobs that a president is given. And you'll see they aren't there to serve the people. The president's there to serve the states. I mean, what's the primary role of president? To execute the laws of the United States. Those laws weren't created by the people. They weren't even created by the states. They were created by the people's representatives and the state's representatives in Congress. The president is the commander-in-chief of the army and the militia brought up by the states. The president has the power to make appointments and make treaties with the advice and consent of the Senate, the representatives of the states in Congress. Are you sensing a pattern here? See, we've turned the president into a king, not an executive of an organization created by the states, the federal government. No. We've turned him into a king. We want him to show up. When disaster happens, we want him to show up and kiss the boo-boo. When we want something done, do we go to our representative? No, we want the president to do it. And if the representatives of the people in the states don't get us what we want, we try to get the president to go around the Constitution and do it for us. Again, are you sensing a theme here? If we go to a national popular vote, either constitutionally by changing the Constitution or through this backdoor process, we make the president more and more the very king we got rid of back in 1776. Or what about the last election? When we were told, we know for sure, Biden said there were 51 intelligence experts that said the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. We know this to be true. And many people, based on that, voted for electors for Joseph Biden to be president. But we find out that's not true. It never was true. The evidence was out there, but now, you know, we had people saying, no, that's not true. And now we find out that at least some of those people, were lying. They admitted it. Intel officials who were instigated to put that letter together admit there was no evidence that it was Russian disinformation. There's actually evidence that it was real. Now, what's interesting is because people made a decision in which electors they would choose for president, because they based that on information that just wasn't so, they knew it to be true, but it just wasn't so, we ended up with Joseph Biden as president. Now, like Biden or hate Biden, that's not the point. See, when the laptop story began to spread after the suppression and all that because of the quote-unquote Russian disinformation, when people started finding out about this story, I think it was 17% of people who voted for Biden, who voted for electors for Biden, would have voted differently if they'd known about the laptop. Meaning, for 17% of the people who voted for Joseph Biden's electors, what they knew that just wasn't so bit them in the backside, didn't it? They would have voted differently if they'd known the truth, not the lie that they had been fed. And based on the many, many, many policy failures of Mr. Biden, I'd say we've all been bitten in the backside by what they knew that just wasn't so. Now, I have some more examples I want to get to, and I do want to end by telling you what you can do to help protect yourself from this, but I have to take another break. Before I go, though, I want to remind you that the Constitution Study is just one of many voices on America Out Loud. So please go to the website, AmericaOutloud.com, every day to find out the latest news and goings on. I do. It's part of my daily routine. But it's more important than ever that we share this information, that we show people that what they know is not so by taking the articles, the stories, the videos, the podcasts, taking all this information and sharing it. Sharing with friends, sharing with family, sharing on the internet, wherever you can. See, by doing so, you are working with us to help secure the blessings of liberty for all of us.
If you're like me, you'd like life to return to some kind of normal. You're burned out on all the fear-mongering, but deep down you try and minimize viral exposure and your risk of getting sick. You've heard it talked about time and again by respected medical professionals. Use a povidone iodine nasal solution. I don't need to tell you just how powerful a nasal cleansing formula with xylitol, povidone iodine, and vitamin D3 for immune support could be. In fact, my attorney told me not to tell you. Google it and find out for yourself. Now, get yourself a bottle of American-made Cofix RX nasal solution. Let's get out and live again. CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com. Use coupon code OUTLOUD and get 20% off.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Well, the Out Loud Truth was the rallying call that started it all. A wide spectrum of programming from world and political news to societal, your health, and cultural stories. 7 amazing years of news stories, informative podcasts, and great talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. The liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and today we're discussing what we know that just ain't so. And while the English majors scream at my use of the word ain't, I want you to consider this. We've looked at a lot of different things, but I want to switch gears now to Social Security. So I'm reminded of a story I had many, many years ago, probably almost 20 years ago. It was with my grandfather. And my grandfather, he was the type of guy that he liked to argue. And we were talking, somehow the discussion came around to Social Security and the fact that, well, it was financially in trouble 20 years ago. And all he could do is complain. He says, well, you know, I don't want to be a burden to my children. See, he knew that Social Security was money that he had put in and that he was taking out, and that by doing so, he was not being a burden to his children. So I asked him, I said, so have you taken out from Social Security more money than you have put in? Yeah, probably, because at this point he'd been on Social Security for a fair amount of time. I said, where do you think the rest of that money comes from? You see, the dirty little secret is that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. Now, I know it wasn't designed that way, at least I believe it wasn't designed that way, but it's basically a Ponzi scheme. Let me explain. So people know that money is taken out of your paycheck to put into your Social Security account. And they know that that money is set aside and it's earning a little bit of interest. So when it's time to retire, there'll be money to pay them for their Social Security and their Medicare. What they know that just isn't so is that money isn't kept in a lockbox. That money is being used for other things. And when Social Security first started, there was a couple things that were vastly different. First of all, most people didn't live much past 65, especially the wage earners. They didn't live much past 65. So Social Security, they might collect money from you for 30 years or more, but only have to pay out for 5 or 10. Now, ask you a simple question, right? If you're getting paid for 30 years and then you only have to pay out for 5 or 10, well, that's not a bad deal, is it? So there was excess money. Now, first of all, one of the changes is we're living longer. My father's over 80 years old. That means he's been on Social Security for more than 15 years. That's a lot longer than 5 or 10, which means he's taking out more. The other thing is the cost of living, medical costs. When they added Medicare to the Social Security system, the vast majority of your medical costs come at the end of your life. So not only has he lived longer than the life expectancy when they set up Social Security, now he's got all of these medical bills that are far beyond what they had planned for. But it's even worse, ladies and gentlemen. See, in the early days of Social Security, when it was taking in a lot more money than it was handing out, because there were more people paying in, there were a lot more people paying in. The ratio of employees to people taking out Social Security was much higher. I want to say it's 10, 20 to 1. Now it's down around 4 or 6, I think. So we have more people taking out money. We have fewer people for every Social Security recipient. And oh, by the way, when Congress saw all those excess proceeds in that quote-unquote lockbox, like any greedy politician, they said, ooh, we could use that. And they took the money out of the lockbox and they left a little IOU, metaphorically speaking. And of course, that meant that they didn't have to raise taxes, they didn't have to print as much money, and you know, it meant they could continue their profligate spending without the American people seeing it. Except now we have a problem. Now, as the numbers start changing, as there are more and more retirees and the fewer and fewer people contributing, as our population ages, as the baby boomers retire, and granted, I'm near the end of the baby boom age, but as we retire, this has a dramatic impact. And that lockbox is gone. The money in there was taken. It was stolen. It was embezzled from the American people. We were told our Social Security contributions were going into a lockbox. Congress took that money away. They embezzled that money. And now we're left holding the bag. Which means Social Security is going to have to do one of two things. Either the federal government's going to have to borrow a boatload more money to pay off Social Security benefits, or Social Security is going to have to cut those benefits. Now, for all of you that lived your life knowing that Social Security would be there to give you some basic level, standard of living, you know, okay, you weren't going to live in a mansion, but you weren't going to be destitute. Take a look around. Ask someone who's currently on Social Security. Are they getting a living income from it? My guess is no. But if you know absolutely that Social Security would be there, and that's just not so, where does that leave you? Now listen, I've paid into Social Security my entire adult life. Actually, even before I was an adult, when I was a kid, working. I remember, I was telling my wife the other day, I remember I was age 14, and I had to get working papers. I had to get basically a permission slip from the government to actually get a job at age 14. And I've been paying Social Security ever since. And guess what? I planned my life not to get Social Security, because I didn't think it would last as long as it did. And now the people in charge of Social Security are saying 2035, and it's empty. It's gone. The money's all gone. And that's if nothing else changes. What does that do to your life if you expected to have this source of income and it collapses? I have one other one I wanted to consider, and this one is completely different. This is non-political in any way, shape, or form. Now, many of you may have heard that there was a new Netflix movie out called Queen Cleopatra, and they made a big deal of casting Adele Adams as a leading role. Why? Well, because she's black, and most of the media and the entertainment industry is extremely concerned about race. Now, there were some people, mostly many of them, I should say, Egyptians that were, well, they're not happy about their famous queen being portrayed by a black woman, well, rather than someone that looked more like the actual Cleopatra. According to an archaeologist out of Boston University, Cleopatra VII was white. She was of Macedonian descent, as were all the Ptolemy rulers. Now, why do I bring this up? Well, here we have this brouhaha, and we've got some people that are upset. But the director of the movie doesn't blame the concern, the issues that people have on the fact that it appears he did not represent, he changed the race of Cleopatra. No, it has to be internalized white supremacy. Now understand, if the historians are true, if the archaeologist is true, and Cleopatra was of Macedonian descent and therefore listen more white, maybe more Arab than black, and really, does it matter in a movie? But this gets to my point. See, we have fetishized this idea of if you disagree with somebody because of anything, it's white supremacy. If you disagree with casting Adele James as Cleopatra, that's white supremacy. If you disagreed with Barack Obama, that's white supremacy. If you disagreed with Hillary Clinton, that was misogyny. If you disagreed with anybody for any reason, if they can find any race, if you disagree with letting boys into the girls' room, then you're transphobic. You see, all of that is based on what people know that just is not so. It's what they know that just ain't so. And it's causing not just a lot of online strife and backlash. It's causing real division. Does anybody remember when the Oscars were scolded because there weren't enough black faces in the nominees? Oh, so you have to make sure that not just the best actor and actress, but that they are the right color. Does anybody really believe that Pete Buttigieg got the job because he knows about transportation or simply because he's a homosexual? You see, those people who know that race, that sexual preferences, that actual sex are the heart of everything. Well, they're wrong. It's true for their hearts. I admit it. For themselves, it is the heart of everything. But is it true for the world? For example, I got accused of taking it easy on the two Tennessee legislators that were expelled for their disorderly conduct because they were black. I found that quite interesting because I intentionally didn't mention their color, their race, because to me, it had nothing to do with the issue at hand. It wasn't because they were black or white or Hispanic or green, but because what they did was wrong. See, I've used this statement frequently. To a racist, everything is based on race. So when I see the director of the movie Queen Cleopatra saying, "You must disagree with me because of white supremacy," tells me a lot about him. He's a racist. He probably doesn't even realize it, but he knows that he's not a racist, but that apparently is not true, not based on his comments. The same for those who supported, who attacked those who disagreed with Obama and Hillary Clinton and pretty much everybody else. The idea that we know that if you disagree with me, it must be because of some external point. It couldn't possibly be that the person was wrong. I remember when the all-woman Ghostbuster film came out and it flopped and everybody blamed it on misogyny. No, the movie sucked. But you see, they know that everything is based on that anybody who disagrees with them must hate them because they're women. But you see, this just ain't so. And not only does it make the people who believe that miserable, but they make the lives of other people miserable as well. So what can we do? How do we protect ourselves from this type of, we can't protect ourselves from what other people do, but how do we protect ourselves from being caught into these traps? And believe it or not, it's actually something I'm going to be teaching in my upcoming mini boot camp. See, one of the things you have to understand is when Jesus told the story in the Bible about two men who built houses. One built his house upon a rock, the other built his house on sand. And when the storms came, the house on the rock stood, and the house on the rock fell, on the sand fell. And the metaphor is simple. If you build your house on a firm foundation, it can survive the storm. Well, the same is true from my point of view. In how you build your point of view, how you build your worldview, how you make an argument, how you come to decisions. If it is based on a firm foundation, when people challenge it, you still stand. But if it's built on shifting sand that changes with the whims of others, well, then any challenge leads to your own downfall. That is why the first part of my mini boot camp is to help people build a firm foundation. Now, I'm looking to hold this boot camp in person in Bedford County, Tennessee. That's Middle Tennessee, if anyone's interested. I'm trying to get a venue somewhere around Independence Day. And I want to teach this class live, and I want to record it so that when I record it, I can post it so that everybody can come through and try this class. Right? And like I said, the first part is going to be, how do you build that firm foundation? How do you build something that doesn't simply say, well, it must be, the person came after me because I'm black or because I'm white or because I'm Hispanic. I didn't get the job because, of racism or sexism, and had nothing to do with the fact that you weren't qualified for the job. The way we get around that is to build on a firm foundation. So when people come at me and accuse me of treating people differently because of the color of their skin or because they're men or they're women or simply because I refuse to kowtow to the mental illness of transgenderism, I refuse to refer to what they want as gender-affirming surgery when it's actually gender-denying surgery. See, when people come after me for that, I've built my position on a firm foundation. so it can stand up when people attack it, because it's based on something I can prove is true. It's not what I think is true. It's what I can prove is true. And I want to share that with others. I want to share that with you. I want to share that with as many Americans that are interested in learning. Now, this mini boot camp I'm putting together is actually the entry point to another program I've started at the Constitution Study. It's called Constitution Study Patriots. And it's a program designed to take people, once they've gone through that boot camp and have an understanding of what we're talking about, how can we then engage and help protect and defend our rights? So when you come out of the mini boot camp, you're going to have a set of tools to begin defending your rights. The rest of the Patriots program is about adding to your toolkit. I want to add via education. I want to give people the opportunities to really learn and study and build that firm foundation. I want communication. I want a way for us to be able to share information across the country and not worry about the censors, be able to get around the censors so we know what's going on and we know where we need to focus. And I want activation. I want people that are prepared to engage and move forward. But to start all that, I've got to get this mini boot camp up and running. Now, I'm trying very hard to have the pages for both the Patriots program and the mini boot camp on the website by Monday, May 1st. So if you're interested, well, please check it out. But one of the ways you can really help people that know things that just aren't so was to tell them that they can also find the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio network. If they can't listen then, you can all listen on podcasts. They usually come out a day or two after they're heard on talk radio. You can listen to your favorite podcast app. Just look for the Constitution Study. But do me a favor. Subscribe to the show. Give me a rating, a review. It helps other people find the Constitution Study as well. Now you can find all the links you need at the homepage at AmericaOutloud.com. But once again, I'm asking you to share them. We need to share the knowledge, we need to share the information, and we need to share the tools to help gain that information if we wish to share the blessings of liberty.